My name is Ron Goldie. I'm a senior extension educator based in Southwest Michigan, where I work on vegetables primarily.
Out this week at the Great Lakes Fruit, Vegetable, and Farm Market Expo, ending the first night is a roundtable discussion of farmers sharing their different ideas and really collaborating some of the effort in the industry. What were some of the discussion? Can you share more about that activity?
Well, a large part of the discussion at that roundtable is what worked this year for growers, what didn't work for growers, problems that they had in terms of could be labor, it could be customer problems, it could be just a bunch of issues that really are relevant to all the people in the room, all the farm marketers, because if one person has that problem, the other person is going to have that problem too. And if one has come up with a solution, okay, let's share the solution. You know, what do you do with difficult customers? You know, how do you handle this situation came up on my farm? Has anybody else had that issue? And somebody on the other side of the room may say, oh yeah, we had that and this is how we handled it. Doesn't mean it's going to work necessarily for everybody, but it worked for them. You know, they had issues such as how do you handle people coming in asking for donations for a worthy cause and they want it that day. You know, it really puts you into a difficult situation because it's hard to say no, but you can't give away the farm either because you get a lot of people coming in and asking for those. So how do you handle those?
Where did this roundtable setup come from and how has that evolved with the expo?
Oh, it started probably 10 years or so ago with like 30 people showed up. And last night, 230 showed up. And so the word's gotten around. This is a good place just to exchange ideas very informally. And you know, when one idea has run its course, then a person has the opportunity to, okay, let's start on a new track. And so we probably last night went through a dozen different issues or more based on what people wanted to talk about. It's all audience driven. It's not driven by Bob Tritton, Mark Longstroth, and myself. It's driven by the audience.
As far as some of those major issues, what were some of the hot topics last night?
Like I mentioned, one of them was dealing with the people wanting wanting you to donate a bushel of apples or more to a worthy cause. That was one of the issues. Other issues are labor. Other issues are with the Department of Labor and certain audits that you may have with the Department of Labor and what they have. The IRS comes up often, you know, various government regulations come up. So those are some of the hot topics. Another thing is dealing with labor. How do you retain labor? How do you get labor? How do you work with high school labor? Has it been a good source for you, high school labor? If it is, how have you been able to get the labor and keep that labor, because working with high school students is somewhat difficult.
When it comes to labor issues, the season started off with a lot of concern about the H-2A program and if that was going to be successful. Going through the year, was that the main labor issue for farmers, or what were some of the other challenges they had?
Not for the farm marketers, because they may not handle the amount of labor that your commercial orchard or commercial vegetable operation does. Labor is always an issue. And getting labor and retaining it is an issue for a long time. Some things need to be changed, and probably not within the time that we have for this radio program. But from the standpoint of a farm marketer, the biggest issue is the seasonality of their labor. Hiring friends, because you know friends like to work with friends, but sometimes that's not the best arrangement. Because friends will oftentimes recommend somebody that they just want to work with, and they may not be the best worker. But other times they are. And so sometimes having friends work with each other can be a benefit, can be a drawback. So you got to be careful there. So labor will always be an issue, I think.
As far as farm marketers in Michigan, how has that changed and how is that developing with new consumer demands?
Well, farm marketing has really taken off. Because people have that buy local mentality. So not only farm markets and farmers markets, municipalities have a lot of farmers markets, but these are stands that a grower has that they sell right at their location mostly. And they've really taken off because people want to buy local. The other thing that has happened is that most of our population is disconnected from farming. but they still want to know where their food comes from. So a lot of these farm markets, if they have a U-Pick, what they're doing is they're not selling strawberries, they're not selling apples, they're not selling peaches. What they're selling is the experience to pick strawberries, the experience to pick apples and peaches. And so it's the experience thing that people really are paying for these days, and that's what they want. You know, lots of times the item they go to get is a secondary thing. It's the ability to go out on a real farm, a working farm, and experience what goes on there.
When it comes to other issues affecting farm marketers, any challenges that, aside from labor, you really see in the next year or a couple years ahead?
Some challenges the farm marketers have are regulations. You know, they have a lot of the same regulations that your average commercial producer has. Food safety regulations on top of labor regulations, on top of immigration regulations. And a lot of them don't have housing, but that could be a concern. Irrigation regulations. So you start stacking all these regulations on top of each other. And also a farm market oftentimes has the food safety from the standpoint of a kitchen, because they have a bakery there. That is a different kind of regulation. And so they have to pass all these things and keep all these things going when they're really a small business. And if you're a large business, you have somebody that is their job to take care of that. But when you're a mom and pop small business, it's difficult to juggle all those balls at one time.
Looking at new opportunities in vegetable crops, you're doing some work looking at winter melons. And as farmers look to diversify some of the things they're growing, what are some of the things you're finding from Extension?
Well, Extension is always involved with introducing new technologies and new crops. And you mentioned the winter melons that I've worked with the past couple of years. Winter melons are something that the average U.S. population doesn't know. But we're getting immigrants from Southeast Asia, China. They do a lot of winter melons in China. Winter melon soup is a big item in China. You know, we look at it, your average Anglo will look at it and say, what do you do with that? And basically they use it in stir fries and soups, just like we would use noodles. You know, it doesn't have a whole lot of flavor to it, adds substance, and it absorbs a lot of flavors. And so that's what they use it for. So if you are a marketer, whether you have a farm stand or go to a farmer's market, and you have a significant Asian Indian or Chinese or Southeast Asian population that you're servicing, then you ought to try to grow winter melons. If you can grow watermelons, you can grow winter melons, because basically they grow the same way.
As far as what they look like and some of that growing season, how are they different than some of the other traditional crops?
Like I said, not much different than watermelon. In fact, some of them look like watermelon. They get a waxy coating on them, and that tells you when they're ripe. When they get that white waxy coating, tells you that they're mature and ready to harvest. And that's what helps them to they're self-preserving in a way. That's why they're called winter melons, because they can be stored and used in the winter. So that you don't need to have a whole lot of cold storage, that kind of thing, to store them. You want to grow one that's big. What we find in marketing trials is that they want something that's about 15 pounds or heavier. And you can get them up to 60 pounds, but they're a real long season at that weight. So there are some out there that are different shapes, the typical watermelon shape, and there's some that are shaped more like a big apple, I would say. They're more spherical and like a big yellow or red delicious apple. But again, 15-pounders are the ones you want to go for.
As far as how they use, knowing when they're ripe, what are some of those consumer end things, if this is a new crop that you're helping educate about as well?
What you need to do is hand out recipe cards, okay? Because people will say, what is that? Because they know it's not a watermelon. They know it's shaped like a watermelon in some cases, but they know it's not a watermelon. So you have a recipe card. This is a winter melon. This is how you use it. A lot of your foodies will know what to do with it, and they'll want it. Like I said, a lot of your Chinese restaurants, which, you know, every community has a Chinese restaurant. And so they will know what to do with it. So you don't need a recipe for them, but your average person going through your farmer's market doesn't know what to do with it. They'll draw their attention because they know it's different. So just have a recipe card.
How do you prepare it or cut into it?
Basically, you cut it, get rid of the seeds, and then you use the flesh. You cut the flesh into chunks lots of times, and then you will just add it to your stir fry or add it to your soup.
Ron, this year, dicamba soybeans were released in certain areas with a lot of questions about if they're having drift and it's being regulated to the extent that it needs to be. How's the vegetable community concerned about this? Are they concerned, and what maybe are some of the risks?
The concern, like you said, is with drift. We have some vegetable crops, tomatoes primarily, that are extremely sensitive to many pesticide drifts, not just dicamba, but they are extremely sensitive to dicamba. Used properly, it should be a minimal issue. Properly meaning that the applier is putting in a something to reduce the drift, which you can do. You're spraying under the right conditions, no wind, and the wind being directed away from your neighbor's tomatoes. That's the biggest risk, is if you have that soybean field right next to a tomato field. Lots of times it's the own producer that does that. You know, they have their soybeans right next to their tomatoes, and if they're not careful, then they can cause their own problems. But used properly, like I said, under the right conditions, it should be safe. But that doesn't always happen. And oftentimes I have actually talked to the soybean grower saying, look, you have a tomato field right next to your soybeans. Be careful. Because even Roundup drift, any kind of drift will cause issues. And so I try to warn them and be proactive. And that's what the tomato grower needs to do, is that if they have a soybean field right next to them, they need to go to that producer and say, okay, is that are you going to spray dicamba? Are you going to spray Roundup on that field? If you are, please be very careful because my tomatoes are sensitive to it. So it is under the responsibility of the soybean grower, but I think the tomato grower also has some proactive responsibility to go to that grower and say, look, be careful.
Are there other crops that could have this issue as well?
Any of the solanaceous are going to be sensitive. Eggplant peppers are going to be sensitive to it. And I imagine there's probably some others, too, that are sensitive to dicamba. But tomatoes, I like to say, are the canary in the coal mine, okay, because they will get things first.
Ron, to wrap us up, any last thoughts when you look at some of the vegetable production here in Michigan in the Midwest and how that's evolving?
Fortunately, our vegetable industry here in Michigan and the Midwest is still strong. I wouldn't say that it's growing by acreage, but the industry is still strong. You know, we have our niche during our season, and I think it's going to continue for a long time. I'm positive about the industry.